Welcome to Science in Your Shopping Cart, a new series that shows how science touches many of the products you buy at the grocery store, from new varieties of fruits and vegetables to technological advances that make your food safer, cheaper, and tastier. I'm Todd Silver. Berries are some of the healthiest and tastiest foods that you could eat. Many types of berries provide health benefits in addition to their sweet flavor, including being high in antioxidants, improve blood sugar, are high in fiber, can help fight inflammation, and could even help reduce the risk of cancer. Here at USDA, researchers have been improving berries and creating new types of berries for over 100 years. And we're still working on berries that are more disease-resistant, last longer in your fridge, and are sweeter and healthier. In fact, later on in this episode, we'll be unveiling a brand new strawberry. So move that shopping cart over to the berry section. You'll be berry happy you did. Blueberries are a nutritional powerhouse that tastes great, whether eating fresh, adding to a smoothie, or enhancing your favorite food. Blueberry pancakes, anyone? The blueberry is named for its velvety deep blue color and is one of the few fruits that's native to North America. Up until the early 1900s, blueberries were picked from the wild, and the bushes often did not survive when transplanted. True domestication was realized in 1910, when USDA botanist Frederick Crevel discovered that blueberry bushes require moist, acidic soil to thrive. In 1916, the first commercially cultivated crop of highbush blueberries was harvested. Most of the blueberry varieties that we enjoy today can be traced back to a USDA breeding program. In fact, ARS is credited for establishing the entire blueberry growing industry in the southeastern United States.
That's kind of a fun story. We originally started out in tongue research. And throughout the 60s, we did tongue research. Well, if you know any history of the Gulf Coast, in August of 1969, Camille hit. And the tongue industry was already struggling. And then when Camille hit, it just kind of wiped out what was left of the tongue research.
That's Donna Shaw, longtime horticulturist with ARS's Thad Cochran Southern Horticultural Research Laboratory in Poplarville, Mississippi, which is a lot harder to say than you think. Farmers use the tongue tree for a variety of purposes, including pressing its seeds into an oil, which could be used as a waterproofing coating for furniture and boats. Donna explained that after Hurricane Camille wiped out the tongue industry down south, many farmers were unsure what to plant next. ARS scientists who spent their entire careers on tongue research now needed to pivot to a new crop.
The station was left with Dr. Spears and one secretary and a technician, and that was it. He did some forage work. He did some work with Canaf. He did some other little things like that. And this is his story because I worked for him for so long. He said, they finally told me, just decide on something and do it. And so he had been working with a collaborator from Beltsville on blueberries. He came down and he was like, golly, these blueberries grow wild all in the woods. They've got to grow here. And so from that, they just kind of started on this totally unknown crop down here of blueberries. And so in about, let's see, in the 71, they planted their first research crop. And then in 1975, we became officially the Small Fruit Research Station focusing on blueberries. And it just blossomed from there. I mean, the whole blueberry industry down here is a direct result because of the research that we've done on blueberries.
The Small Fruit Research Station has produced many blueberry cultivars like Gumbo, Biloxi, Gupton, and varieties of Rabbit Eye, which is native to the southeastern U.S. Biloxi is one of the few blueberries that's available from November to March. So if you're eating blueberries in the winter, chances are it's Biloxi. Today, researchers are looking at ways to shorten the production season and get blueberries to the marketplace faster. Geneticists like Dr. Ibrahim Babaker are breeding early season varieties that tolerate the late season frost, like gumbo. These varieties offer expanded production windows with better tolerance to environmental stresses and resistance to common diseases.
In order for the grower to make money, they have to get to the market early, like May. So gumbo has the fruit quality trait from the high bush. At the same time, it has adaptation trait from the Rabidae and native species. Also, it's early. It produces the fruit sizes. Is big, so that's one of the trade that also the consumer like interested in.
Dr. Babaker and his colleagues are also looking to drastically reduce the decade or longer time that it takes to develop new blueberry varieties. They're moving from phenotypic selection methods to selection based on DNA sequencing, using data from previous breeding projects to develop DNA markers for ideal cultivar desirable traits. And they're employing new technologies to test thousands of samples at a rapid pace.
We are trying to move from phenotypic selection based on just observation out in the field to selection based on the DNA sequence. Also, we start to move to high throughput phenotyping, which will help us to process a large number of samples and screen for sugar content, fructose, glucose, sucrose. And we could do all of that process like 1,000 or 2,000 samples in 2 weeks. So if we combine that with marker-assisted technology, I'm expecting like in the future, we could move like to 7 to 10 years to the new cultivar.
With new cultivars comes the challenge of getting growers to plant the new crops. Dr. Babaker hosts field days to educate farmers on the latest blueberry varieties. There, they can visually inspect and taste the blueberries, learn about their growing patterns, and realize other benefits such as pest and disease tolerance.
I think also you need to convince the grower that, you know, what you develop is better than what they have.
I think the biggest challenge with the blueberry is the marketing of it. Not only are they big and beautiful, but their flavor matters. I think what I always love is the interaction with growers and the people, the education on, you know, just teaching them how good blueberries are and how good they are for you. They are so good for our body. It is just remarkable what all they do for us.
Here in the Pacific Northwest, berry growers had a thorny issue on their hands. You see, they were growing these beautiful blackberries, but the thorny branches made them difficult to pick. Growers turned to ARS for help, and researchers at the Horticultural Crops Research Laboratory in Corvallis, Oregon, came through with a new thornless blackberry plant called Black Diamond. This blackberry had yield, berry size, and flavor that rivaled the traditional varieties.
That absolutely was a game changer. And so as soon as we had that thornless, you know, people started tearing out fields of other things that they had grown and planting Black Diamond. Since that became so popular, everything that we've released and named since then has been thornless.
That's Mary Peterson, biological science technician at the lab here in Corvallis. Since Black Diamond debuted in 2005, researchers have brought improved thornless blackberry varieties to the market, including Triple Crown, Nightfall, Columbia Giant, and for all you Johnny Depp fans, there's Black Pearl.
Yeah, we named that before that movie came out. The semi-erex that we just released, we have a series that we're calling the Celestial Series. I'm not sure who named it that, but that's how it's becoming known now. So Galaxy, Eclipse, and Twilight, and then we have another one that should be coming out in the next year or so. They are more adaptable to other areas of the country and really of the world. They have the erect architecture, which makes them easier to manage. They have really good yields.
Developing semi-erect blackberry plants is impactful to the berry industry because it allows for easier hand picking and even for some machine picking, which can reduce labor costs. On the other side of the country, ARS researcher Fumi Takeda developed a mechanical trellising system that not only improves berry picking, but also protects berries from chilly nights.
You can see the effect of our training system. Blackberry plants typically like to grow upright, but in our training system, we change the plant's architecture by bending the the canes that emerge from their crown, and as they come up, we bend those green primal canes and train them to grow horizontally.
Dr. Takeda is a research horticulturist at the Appalachian Fruit Research Station in Kearneysville, West Virginia. He showed me his trellising system, which is already being used across the United States and even by farmers in the Ukraine. Growers told him that the trellising system has increased harvest by 30%.
In areas like Ohio and Indiana, where winter temperatures really drop below 5 degrees Fahrenheit, these plants could then be covered with material like this that would go floating row cover. And that is sufficient to protect these buds from winter injury.
The trellis system runs the length of a row of blackberry plants. As the plants develop, the wiring keeps them growing upward. The trellis system rotates as the plants mature, to the point that they stand straight during the prime picking season. At that point, the berries are literally hanging outward, making it much easier for pickers and even for some harvest machinery to select the berries. On frosty nights, the trellis system turns the plants horizontal, and a blanketing system covers the berries from the cold.
In late April and May, when these plants have already produced flower shoots and they may be blossoming, if they're not protected with any kind of a blanket or row cover, and temperature drops below, say, 28, 29 degrees Fahrenheit, the flower buds and flowers can be damaged by these freezing temperatures. We were initially focused on reducing winter injuries to help the growers in the Midwest, because that's where the greatest need was to expand the blackberry production. But there are now growers in the southern states, like Georgia, that are now starting to use this type of trellising system. And there, if they have rows set up east-west and could position all the fruit on the north side, then the fruit will not be hit by direct sunlight. So by reducing the sunlight level on the developing fruit and then having them in this so-called partially shaded environment, then we are able to minimize or reduce the loss of quality brought on by intense sunlight and high temperatures.
Most of the blackberries and raspberries grown in the United States are purchased by the individually quick frozen industry, which adds these delicious vitamin-packed goodies to your ice cream, yogurt, smoothies, and other treats.
The IQF industry, the individually quick frozen raspberries, that's a way for people to have, you know, that fresh raspberry flavor from their freezer where they can keep it longer. But as fresh market has become more important, of course, you know, we want to give the consumers what they want and we want the industry to thrive. So we've spent more time breeding things for fresh sales.
In addition to taste, size, and appearance, ARS researchers are breeding new varieties that are firmer, sturdier, and have a longer shelf life, all critical elements for the fresh market industry.
The fruit has to be firm enough to go through the harvester. The plants need to be sturdy enough not to be damaged by the harvester. There are traits like how well the fruit releases from the plant, because you don't want to have to beat up the plant too much to try to pick it. There are always places to make improvements, you know, and there are always new issues and new things to address. So, you know, it's just really fun. And then it's just so heartwarming to see how much people love berries. And you just really want to make it so that they can always have that, right?
Berries are a favorite fruit among many. And with all these new cultivars, they could be enjoyed year-round. But growing berries can be a challenge, especially if you're a novice gardener like myself and you don't have a large yard for a garden. Here are some tips for growing berries at home. For blueberries, plant two different varieties with similar bloom periods to allow cross-pollination and good fruit set. Blueberries need a sunny location. They need well-drained soils with a low pH, preferably between 4.5 to 5.0, and they need high organic matter content. blueberries grow best in acidic soil. Don't fertilize your blueberries the first year. Let them get established first. After year one, if you want to fertilize your blueberries, use an azalea fertilizer. This fertilizer is made for acid-loving plants like blueberries. Mature blueberry plants thrive when pruned. They like a clipping in late summer after the fruit has been picked. Check out USDA's plant hardiness zone to determine which blueberry varieties are best to grow in your area. For blackberries, try one of the primacane varieties, which are fall-bearing or ever-bearing plants and are easy to manage. Wait until the second year to pick the fruit, which will allow them time to establish themselves in the ground. Once the plant grows to about your knees, clip off the succulent tips, which will help encourage flowering. And at the end of the season, prune off all the canes and wait for the new canes to come up next season.
This is the room where I have the pollen donors for the crosses that I want to make this winter. These pots are a breeding selection that has really big fruit and is very resistant to powdery mildew, which is a disease that affects the leaves, and if it gets really bad, it can ruin the fruit.
I'm here at the Genetic Improvement of Fruits and Vegetables Lab in Beltsville, Maryland. This is where research geneticist Dr. Kim Lewers and her colleagues are creating new varieties of strawberries. Inside their greenhouse are dozens of plants of strawberries, grouped according to a crossing plan she designed to create new seedlings with all the characteristics that make them appealing to both growers and consumers. Think taste, size, color, storage length, growing season, firmness, and disease and pest resistance.
I'm always so excited to come in this room and see these plants. They're so lush and beautiful, and I imagine to myself that one of these may be the next big cultivar.
This lab has long produced strawberry cultivars with natural disease resistance that don't need to be sprayed with fungicides, including Keepsake, a promising new cultivar with outstanding flavor and shelf life. Then there's Early Glow, long considered the gold standard for flavor, and Flavor Fest, which is quickly gaining market share for its high yield of large, flavorful berries. One nursery told Dr. Lewers that they sold over 17 million Flavor Fest plants just this past year.
That's such a thrill that we are able to help so many growers. And also such a thrill to realize it all came from just one little baby like this.
Stepping inside a walk-in freezer, I was shocked to see the strawberry plants sitting in this cold actually flowering. Each plant is a new breeding selection that needs a chilling period to reset their clock before a vigorous spring growth period. That's when they'll produce runners for further testing. Okay, it's too cold for me. Let's step back outside. I asked Dr. Lewers about their newest strawberry release, called Cordial.
It's a late season cultivar, which the growers have been asking me for, and it has very large fruit, which the growers always want because the customers like to see big fruit. It is naturally resistant to the key fruit rots that are worldwide in importance.
All strawberries need sun to make sugar and taste sweet, but rainy days mean strawberries have less sugar. It can be very tart, but with Cordial, even after rainy days, it still tastes good due to its low acidity.
It doesn't taste too tart. It's not going to bite you. It's friendly. It's cordial. That's how it got named.
Today, we're going to pull the curtain back and see how new cultivars are created. We start in the greenhouse, where Dr. Lewers grows many unique strawberry seedlings, each with its own distinct characteristics. Every plant produces what is commonly called a runner, which looks like a long green stem coming from the base of the plant. The runner carries all the characteristics of its mother plant. Only about 50 of these seedlings will actually be selected in the field for further testing and given a selection number. Dr. Lewers tests her new selections by propagating many copies of each selection from the runners and then test them for ideal characteristics and any flaws. Sound easy? Well, it's not. It takes years of testing to decide which seedlings have what it takes to be a cultivar with all the traits that growers, markets, and consumers are looking for. There's a ton of science, knowledge, and yes, lots of math that go into breeding these plants. The genetic makeup of each cultivar has to be examined, and because we're dealing with nature, the plants don't always produce as expected, especially when it comes to the repeat fruiting trait.
We decided independently and together to use more advanced genetics tools like molecular markers and genetic mapping to try to better understand the inheritance of the repeat fruiting trait.
As an example, Dr. Lewers and her colleagues couldn't figure out why certain strawberry plants did not fruit repeatedly as anticipated.
I noticed that if the molecular fingerprint said that it should be a once-fruiting type, it was. Always. No question. Always. But if the molecular fingerprint said it should be repeat-fruiting, it was only half the time. And that made me think, huh, half the time, one-to-one, there's another gene involved. I studied these segregation ratios until I realized that there was one gene that was shutting off the gene we had all mapped. It was like if you drive down Main Street and you're trying to get from point A to point B, and there's three traffic lights. One says green, but the next one says red. You're not going anywhere. That's the way these particular genes worked, and it's not very common. We all know it exists in plants, but it's rare to find an example. It was very frustrating. It took a lot of work, many years, often working way past supper time, but it was worth it.
The revelation that comes after discovering something for the first time is truly a unique experience for the scientific field.
This is something that I want to share with any young person who's listening and who is considering a career in science. There is nothing that I know of that can replace the thrill that you get as a scientist working on analyzing your data or being out in the field, and you either suddenly see something or you suddenly discover something in your data, and you know that in that moment, you are the only person in the entire world who knows that fact, who's in on that secret. It's just a wonderful feeling. I don't know any other job where you can get that except in science, and I love it.
Thanks for listening to this superfruit edition of Science in Your Shopping Cart. Stay tuned for future podcasts, and in case you missed it, check out our other podcasts on our website or on our YouTube channel. For Science in Your Shopping Cart, I'm Todd Silver.
Science in Your Shopping Cart is produced by the Office of Communications, Agricultural Research Service, an agency of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. For more information, visit www.ars.usda.gov. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Like us on Facebook, and watch us on YouTube.